Blog Talk Radio.
Root irex pavi krenu. Hardship is perpetuated by the false value we place on hard-won achievements. Let your heart swell with praise and gratitude at the gifts of grace, that the accomplishments of your life may be effortless. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to A Life of Miracles. We are your hosts. I'm Denise, and welcome my beautiful sister, Linda Iverson. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Denise. How are you today?
Wonderful. I'm wonderful. Delighted to be here on this gorgeous, glorious spring afternoon as we are recording our show. And how was your week, Linda?
My week has been very eventful. I've had lots of stuff that has appeared that I haven't noticed before. Yesterday I was out and the birds and stuff are just crazy, and there's so much new stuff that I haven't heard before. So I'm experiencing stuff that I haven't noticed before. So it's been wonderful.
Like a new song?
Well, there's actually, it seems like it's new birds. I was laying outside yesterday, so I had my head covered, so I wasn't seeing anything, but I was hearing. And they usually start, I always have my windows open in my house, and they start their songs between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And they go nonstop. They're chitter-chattering and just going, having a great, gay old time until about 11 o'clock in the morning. And then it kind of goes really still and quiet. It's almost like the calm has come over the sea and there's no sound at all.
Yeah.
But up until that time, they chatter. I've got a crow that just is like giving me the gears. Just.
Oh, I love crows. The passive power. You know, it's funny because this week, too, I have found to be incredibly magical and miraculous. And I 100% agree. I have observed the same thing with the birds. And, you know, it's like there's new birds. What I've been feeling is there's a new song that's being sung throughout.
And you can almost feel an excitement.
Yeah.
In their talking, it's like, oh, it's like the story of the week, and they're having to share it, and it's like it's so excited, it's like they almost run away with it, and then all of a sudden they'll draw back, and it's like, and then it gets just going crazy, and yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, and I've wake me up at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I noticed, like, because then we usually sit outside in the evening with our cup of tea after dinner, and I've noticed they're really active and loud, and, you know, they like to go on top of the pool and, you know, have a little bath in the water that's sitting there on top.
There you go, yeah.
And then they go and go and go until about 8:45, and then it's like there's a cold. They're all down for the night.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But you know what? It's so funny, too. Like, one of the girls I work with even said the same thing to me yesterday. Denise, what is with the birds?
Yeah, a lot of people are noticing them.
Yeah. She said, oh, I had, because she's in an apartment and has a balcony. And she said, there was a woodpecker has started coming around.
Oh.
And he started pecking on the metal. You know, and she's like, oh, that's silly. You're not getting any food there. She said, but, oh, she was so mad she didn't have her camera because, you know, she's watching this little woodpecker trying to peck on the metal balcony.
Yeah.
And then there's a little wren sitting, like, just a little bit further down. And he's, like, looking at the woodpecker, like, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to be pecking there.
Have you lost your mind? Yeah.
It was like that. Like, hey, buddy, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to be pecking there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like you're saying, it's like they're talking to each other, and I feel like they're talking to us, and it just, it feels very, very magical.
And I found the intuition. I've noticed when I'm with Wendy, like, it's almost like I'm finishing her sentence. Like, I know exactly what it is she's going to say before she says it. It's like there's such a deep connection.
Yeah.
And she was talking about when she was working on Sunday, she had, or on Saturday, she was cleaning offices. And she said, and there was this deer that was outside. She could see it. And it stood and it watched her clean the whole office. It never moved.
Wow.
And she went, she's usually there are deer there, but there's never just one.
Yeah.
And so when she went to leave, it left too. And I said, yeah, but it didn't leave. It disappeared, right? She goes, yeah, it did. It just disappeared.
Wow.
And so when I was going home last night from Donna's, it was like, huh, I need to go this way because there's a deer waiting for me. And I took the turn, turned off, went down the road, and there was the deer stand on the side of the road.
Oh, my gosh. Did you take its picture?
No, I didn't, but I did get an interesting picture last night. When I left Donna's, I thought, oh, I should take a picture because the sunset was really quite nice. But there's this orange, I'm not sure what it is, I can't figure out, but it's in the window of the truck, in the side driver's window. But there's nowhere it could be reflecting from.
Yeah.
And it was ahead of where the sun was at. So I'm not sure what it is. But.
Wow.
But it was like, yeah, I was like, you need to take a picture. So I took two of them, and it's in both of them. But, yeah.
Oh, that's, wow. I'd like to see those.
I'll send them to you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Mm. So, yeah, so that, I too have, yeah, it's been very magical. Wow. And, yeah, I can't say that I've noticed a heightened intuition, but I mean, maybe.
Have you noticed how the birds and the animals come closer?
Yes.
I have noticed that with the birds.
Yeah. And it's almost like they seem smarter or something.
Well, I think what it is the way I've looked at it is our vibration has gotten high enough that they recognize that we're not a threat to them.
Yeah.
And so they're wanting to interact in our energy because that crow that's given me the gears.
Yeah.
I mean, it sits right on the picnic table, right on the patio table, like not 3 feet from me.
Wow. Oh.
So, yeah.
Amazing.
Really interesting.
Yeah. We've had bees, too, like the bumblebees, you know, the yellow and black bumblebees have been around. And I think the dandelions are multiplying by the minute.
Yeah, they've shown up here now, too.
Yeah. And Jim was going to cut the grass on Saturday, so I, you know, did a little prayer before he was going out, and I, you know, asked the fairies of the garden to, you know, that he's coming out to cut the grass, and, you know, talk to the dandelions to remove their life force so nobody is hurt.
Yeah.
And honestly, they did. Like, but as soon as he was done, honest to God, I looked, and there was like maybe two or three dandelions. And then the next thing I know, we had like tons of them. So, okay, but they bring the bees, so we've had bees. And yeah, it just feels like everything is so alive and vibrant and, yeah, energized. It feels amazing. So, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, no, go ahead.
But what I wanted to share with our listeners too was it was so funny, the synchronicities of this week, because we had pre-recorded a show with our sister out, your good friend, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And just for whatever reason, there was some problems with the sound recording, so it wasn't a good enough quality to share. So Charlotte has agreed to come back next week, so we'll clear everything and have a wonderful show with Charlotte next week. But after we had recorded that show, or before we had started recording the show, I got the message that I was going to get a gift. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm very open to receiving. So, and then after the show, you sent me a wonderful piece of writing that felt like an amazing gift. And I would like to read that if you're okay
with it. That's fine with me, certainly.
Okay, so what you sent me is, "You are the sum total of all there is. You are the light being that is connected through your heart to all there is. You breathe the beauty of your being, and you are the beauty of all times. Allow yourself to feel the blessings of all that is by allowing yourself just to be. There is no need to do in order to gain the love and acceptance around you. You will give it to you unbidden as they are returning to you what you first give to yourself. Love and do for yourself first, and the beauty you hold in everything in your existence will flow to you in the same love and beauty that you are. You hold the pure love of source within all your being, and it is reflected outward for all to feel." By Linda Iverson. And I have to say, Linda, that really, really touched my heart, and I really sat with it and connected with it and felt, okay, what if I shift my perspective and actually saw myself like that, that I am love, I am praise, I am gratitude, and let that in my field of hope filter out and touch all life and have it come back. So I kind of just, you know, sat with that intention, and then from that I started, you know, looking at the I Am presence and what Almeen has to say about the fields of hope. And I came across the 7 principles of the unfolding journey, and it just all felt like, after I had, you know, kind of gone through this process and shifting my perspective, rather than looking at, you know, oh, maybe what I need to clear, or, you know, what's the occlusion here, or, you know, what if I just see myself as perfect and I'm loved and I'm loving and focus on that.
Right.
And I start doing that, and honestly, life has been so magical and miraculous these last few days, just holding that perspective.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're so very welcome. But I do need to share that when I sent that poem to you, it was because when I was going through my book, it kind of jumped out of the page at me as a reflection of how I see you. And so that's why I shared that one with you.
Well, it was wonderful. And
well, I'm glad you enjoyed it and were able to use it. That's good.
Really did love it. So thank you. And hopefully, you know, it's going out there and it's awakening other hearts. So truly a gift, Linda.
Oh, thank you so very much.
Do you want to share the principles of the unfolding journey?
That would be wonderful. If you want to read the seven principles as you read it, then I'll read the comments that follow with the statements as to how Almeen clarifies them, if that's how you want to do it.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Let's do that. So just to clarify, the seven principles of the unfolding journey is found on Almeen's I Am Presence. So anyone who's been on there, it's back in October they were given. If you haven't got a chance to join, you can still sign up for the I Am Presence. It's fabulous material from Almeen. So the first principle we have, and each principle has a wheel, is all of life is your temple. If there is something you find unholy, there is something of yourself that you reject.
And so Almeen's comments on principle one, the temple of life consists of seven fields of perception, seven parallel realities or dimensions. The subtle information received from these realities download into the bloodstream from the chakras, each chakra relating to a specific corresponding field. The highest evolution that can be achieved in consciousness would be to access the life from all seven levels at once. The collective fields are known either as the temple of life or the field of hope. The field of hope is a multidimensional stage upon which an individual can express. When the judgment of good and bad is present, however, membranes between the seven fields of perception become impenetrable matrices rather than clear membranes. The membranes are formed by suppressing a specific perception. When you remember the perception and apply it, the membrane disappears. The seven perceptions of the river of life are the perceptions that, when applied and understood, will replace the dividing membranes and unify the chakra field.
Wow, there's a lot in that.
Yeah, so what? Basically, my understanding, the way I've understood it and worked with it, is that it's working with those principles and allowing yourself to recognize that the one that you read, that's one of the principles that if we incorporate that and live it and recognize, as it says, as you read, about how it, if we find something unholy, which is something that we're going to be judging, then that's where it's a part of ourselves that we're rejecting.
Yeah.
Because we are the all of everything.
Yeah. And I love how, you know, the chakras can change, and rather than being, you know, the individual separated chakras that we've known or come to know, they become a unified field, which is,
right,
of course, much more harmonious and interactive.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do number two. So, principle two, in releasing value judgments, we release judgments of what is bad more easily than what is good, because carrying what is good on a journey that never ends sustains us. However, the game of pretending there is good and bad is but the dance of light and shadow.
Right. And Amin's description of the principle number two is, the mind attempts to control the present by trying to avoid the unpleasant events of the past. The heart tries to control the future by attempting to recreate the high points and happy experiences of the past. The body, when the mind is still and the heart fulfilled, experiences the moment. If a vaster perspective is cultivated, life's benevolent nature can be seen. Even if a heinous act occurs, it is the forced destructuring of a specific part of life so that another aspect can flourish or be prodded into action. The more aware a society is and the more fluid it can move into new expression, the less likely it is to attract cataclysmic change. When we release self-pity and victimhood, we are less likely to want to hold on to the good things, trusting that all of life is good and supportive of new expressions. Self-pity, in its opposite, self-importance, is the root of the law of compensation, and the law of compensation is the cause of polarity. The movement between two opposite poles that energizes the reality of opposites. In the duality of opposites, life is in constant opposition to the individual. It is only when we integrate opposites that we can see life as benevolent, and we can only transcend opposites when we are free of self-pity and self-importance.
Yeah, and this one, this second principle too, reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, embracing the light and shadow as a way of clearing opposites.
Right, in that they have to be balanced.
Yeah,
you have to have as much light as you have dark, or right, as much dark as you have light, become balanced.
And I remember Almin saying that about the light elixirs. In order for the light elixirs to be, you know, an alchemical process, I had to have as much dark as light in it to balance them. Okay. So we have principle three, under the canopy of divine compassion, emphasis is given according to the discernment dictated by the steps of your dance throughout eternity. When emphasis of love is given indiscriminately through neediness, the grace of the dance diminishes.
Yeah, because there's an agenda attached to it, right?
Yeah.
So Almin's description. The constant expression of the emotion of love, which is the desire to include, depletes both oneself and another. Desire-based emotions are a tool used to create momentum, to provide the impetus for movement in a certain direction. Used consciously, they enliven and give vitality. Used out of neediness of any kind, such as the need to feel attractive or desirable, they become manipulative and, like any other means of trying to control, leak energy and bind power. The canopy of divine compassion is the constant state of living our highest truth with an open heart. At times it may call for assertiveness or other attitudes not normally understood as being compassionate, but divine compassion is true to the self at all times. Divine compassion lives the inevitable life that transcends reason and embraces the moment. And that's really powerful in that when you're allowing yourself to recognize that if you love, you love all. And the love, from the way I've learned it and the way it's I've experienced it in my life, it has to start with the love of self.
Yes.
If there isn't the love of self, then there is that neediness and there is that other part that pulls you off center.
Yes, definitely. It has to start with the self. Yeah.
And it really does surprise me when I talk to people and I'm, you know, and I ask, so do you love yourself? And it's like, well, no, not really. And it really shocks me sometimes at how they don't recognize how important it is. Like, they'll love everybody and everything around and outside of themselves, but when you ask them if they will love themselves, well, I've got a friend that she says, no, that will never happen in this lifetime.
Oh, that's so sad.
And it's like, but it has to start there. If you're seeking change and you're wanting things to happen in your life, it has to start from that point.
Yeah, it does. It has to start with, well, it's, you know, it's like the first principle says, if there's, you know, something you're not loving, it's a part of yourself that's being rejected. So can you imagine what life would be like if we all started just with loving ourselves? Like, not in a, you know, a selfish...
But it's recognizing that, I think the key for it, Denise, I didn't mean to interrupt you, is that in loving ourselves can totally own and recognize that we are the all of the everything there is, that when we start with the love of self, we love everything else in and of ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's having that reverence and respect for ourselves, then we have it for our life.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's do that. Okay, so we have principle number 4. In the vehicle of our perception, propelled by our joy, we steer our way upon the eternal adventure of self-discovery with the game of questions and answers. I love this one.
And so Almeen comments, when life goes around and around like a disc rotating through cycles of repetition, mastery is the most disciplined way possible to deal with the repeating events of lifetimes. This ensures that we learn as much from experiences as we can to minimize the unpleasant forced change that manifests as cataclysms. When we evolve beyond a life of opposites, we can do more than just monitor our responses to life. Turning opposition into perception, we can help steer it. We steer our way through the ocean of potential by questions we ask. We determine what to ask, what brings us joy. To gain perception has been a duty in the realm of opposites, which, like a hall of mirrors, obscures the truth. Truth's definition changes when we break free from the repeating cycles on the disc of life. Truth then becomes that which we express in clarity and authenticity. The perception we gain in the form of the awareness we seek is just a vehicle to guide our journey. Question has a never-ending array of answers, and every answer begets the endless line of questions. Nothing can then ever be known. Perception is just a vehicle that gracefully carries us where we steer it.
Isn't that wonderful? I love this because I remember asking Almeen about the question and answer in Niagara Falls retreat, because I had previously misunderstood that, you know, asking the question is maybe not the best way to move forward, but, you know, and she kind of explained, well, you know, the questions are what stirs the journey. Where is your inspiration? That, you know, it's like that, what's propelling you forward. And for every question, there's like, you know, an infinite number of answers. It depends, like,
the thing, you know, like you said, like you had said about how the question, trying to find the question where it spoke in here, we determine what to ask by what brings us joy.
Yeah.
So we're focusing on the joy and the passion that we hold within life. So then that's why the questions move the journey for you.
Yes. Yeah. And help us gain the you know, new perception or new perspective. Yeah.
Whereas you're going to get something different if your question is coming from a place of need or a place of judgment.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's a good principle to remember and incorporate. Okay, so we have principle number 5. Whether we reach into the known, the unknown, or the unknowable, Every question immediately presents an answer. When reaching into the unknowable, the answer newly formed from the never-ending supply of unarticulated potential brings with it the glory of being a wayshower of the cosmos.
Yeah, and so that's where Almin says that all questions are really questions into the unknowable, since life itself is unknowable. Anything that can be defined or described is just a dream. The seven fields of perception are stages within the dream. The aware master becomes a lucid dreamer of all seven states of dreaming. The known, as the term is used, is the information that pertains to the application of a specific perception. It is the testing of a hypothesis. If life were this principle, as yet unknown, how would I apply it? If nothing can be known, what point is there in stretching the question as far beyond the confines of the existing paradigm as possible? The most obvious reason is that we must, at all costs, avoid falling into the trap of complacency that makes us think we know. To think we know creates a belief system, and a belief system traps the awareness in a pond of stagnation. Secondly, the more we reach beyond what mind can control, the more we humble reason, and through humility can be effortlessly known.
Wow.
So through humility, all can be effortlessly known.
Yes. And, you know, I like that about not being complacent, because if we're not asking the questions, if we're letting life just happen to us and, you know, not steer it, then we do become complacent or stagnant.
And see, it's really interesting that how these fall into, especially this number five, Denise, into what you were explaining about the writing that I gave you. And how you incorporated, and it's in this line, the testing of the hypothesis. If life were this principle, how would I apply it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you did with that writing.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
So that's how you would incorporate working with this material, by taking the principles and each one of them, reading them, feeling them, incorporating them, and then asking, how would I apply it?
Yeah.
Exactly. So you already gave us the example of how we need to do that.
Well, yeah, it's fun. It's a journey that never ends.
Yes.
Okay, so we have principle number six. When we live a clear, surrendered, and recapitulated life, our reality moves around us like a rotating troop torus. When we resist life, we leave our position at the center of the troop torus, entering it instead. When we become subject to the tyranny of its cycles of time and space, the surrendered life establishes us as the master of our own destiny, and our reality as our harmonious expression.
Wow.
See, when we resist life, that's when we have karma. You keep going around and around that tube, Taurus.
Yeah. And I truly believe the way I've experienced my life and the aha moments that have come for me, it's recognizing that in the moment of each experience, when you allow yourself the feelings and emotions of that experience in that moment, it helps to get you off the cycle. It helps you to get off that wheel, because you've learned what it is that experience was there for. Yeah. But when you push it down and push it away, it comes back around. And each time you do it, it'll come back around stronger and stronger until it comes to that cataclysmic state where you have no choice but to face it.
Yeah. Which is really, I think, what that sums up the principle that you read for number four.
Yes.
Exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, eventually we're going to get it. So, you know, it's okay. There's no mistakes.
know?
Yeah, there are no mistakes. And because it's there, and it's recognizing that we bring things to ourselves for a purpose and a reason. There's always a blessing. Even though it seems to be so catastrophic or whatever, there's still a blessing to be found within it if you look deep enough and get past the illusions and the stuff that's there. So the comments on Principle 6 from Almeen is that the seven fields of perception can be divided into these three sections. The fields 1 and 2, the unknown principles with experience. They therefore are concerned with the known. Field 3 and 4 examine abstract relationships and perceptions and extract answers whenever possible. These two fields work with the unknown. The fifth and sixth fields examine the stream of unknowable information delivered by the seventh field. When we live from the surrendered life, acknowledging humbly the unknowability of life, we live from the seventh field of perception, the middle of the tube torus. The importance of this is that it is the sovereign position from where we influence life, rather than being captured by it. To be captured by life is to be on a rotating disc spiraling around and within the tube torus. The disc represents the known, the answer. The spiral within the tube torus represents the unknown, the question. The known and unknown can only trap us into their cycles of repeated life if we let them become a reality rather than a tool. Their ability to trap us lies in the way we allow them to become belief systems, rather than a fluid testing of a hypothesis. As belief systems, they stick to the membrane, separating the fields and turning them into dictatorial matrices. The matrices reduce clarity until we can no longer see any other way of life. The answer to this is to allow the seventh field's influence to touch all dimensions of our lives with the unwavering perspective of the unknowability of life.
Wow.
So it's interesting that this ties in. These will tie into the runes as well.
I was just thinking that.
Because each of the runes has a field of perception.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that the seventh set of the runes works with all of the others together. It's the information giver.
Yeah, that's the one, the field of perception in
the unfolding journey, the living library, which is what we're talking about here.
Do you know off the top the seven fields?
The first one is shamanism.
Right.
The second one is incorruptible white magic,
mm-hmm.
which is the mother's library. The first deck is the tiger, white tiger. The third field of perception is of healing,
mm-hmm.
and that's the sacred order of the butterfly.
Okay.
Excuse me. The fourth one is... No. Tiger, mother's... Okay, yeah. The fourth one is the field of perception of mysticism, which is the white rose.
Okay.
And the fifth one is the field of perception of metaphysics, which is the blue light.
Yeah.
The sixth is the field of perception of godhood, and those, which we don't know anything about yet, but I have them because I was working on the book, is the runes of the Lion's Gate.
Oh, that's with the third eye?
And so then the last one is the perception of field of unfolding journey, which is what we're talking about now.
Yes.
And it is the ruins of the living library.
Oh. So it's really great for anyone who's going to be, you know, want to get into studying the ruins and more depth to incorporate some of these principles, right?
Yeah. And see, when this came out in October, I hadn't gotten to the part of the book where I was working on the rune book.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that the two tied together, but when you look at it, they really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, totally.
Yeah.
They're in sync. Yeah. So, wow, see, Linda, we're already on it.
We're there.
The runes are calling us. We're getting ready.
Yes. And they hopefully will be here soon.
Yes, hopefully very soon, within, you know, a matter of weeks.
We can always trust that that's what will be unfolding.
Yeah. In the perfect moment,
yes,
it will be released. So
yes, that is true.
We're preparing ourselves now.
Yes.
Don't mind you. You've been working on it. I'm sure you're long prepared.
Oh, I don't know. I don't. I've had the pleasure and the honor of being able to help facilitate putting the book together, and it's been, you know, very rewarding.
Yeah. Oh, of course. It goes without saying. It's an honor and a privilege to work with all of this sacred material. And yeah, we're happy that you got to do that, Linda, and we are excited to get the book when it comes out. So we're at number 7 already.
We are, okay. Yes.
So principle 7 is life with the tube torus is experienced as a two-dimensional dream of yesterday and tomorrow. The three-dimensional reality at the center of the tube torus experiences the never-ending river of life, flowing through the newness of the moment with all its regenerative power. The 7 principles of the unfolding journey equal effortless self-regeneration through perpetual alchemy.
And Almin comments and describes this as, time is the jailer that can keep the imprisonment of the tube torus in place. Time stops flowing in linear progression when we live from the silent, surrendered core of our being, the moment. When we accept the responsibility of being the co-creator of our reality, we can only effectively accomplish this when living in the moment, which is the place of power. Time then flows in centrifugal rings from our actions, the way a pebble dropped into the pond could create rings in standing waveforms. This is called exponential time of motionless motion. Exponential time is the evolutionary step after linear time. The goal of evolving time is to reach a state of timelessness that still maintains self-awareness and the self-sovereignty to participate in contributing to the living work of art that is life unfolding. To be a timeless co-creator with the infinite in our particular reality, the 7 principles that remove the division between the fields are a very important step to accomplish the unified field necessary for timelessness.
And I think for that, the Sabahut is a fabulous tool.
Yes,
to
as
prepare.
Are the definitely, as are the ones that we did when we did the 4, the 18. Those are all.
Yeah.
Tools that we were being able to use to help get us to this place of silent surrender.
Yeah. And I was also feeling, too, the effortless self-regeneration through perpetual alchemy. And another way to, like, incorporate that and live that is the ceremony from the angel gods for perpetual self-regeneration with the 30 principles is another way to do it.
Right.
Fabulous.
And the way you incorporate those is you work with them enough that when something, what I found in my life is when something comes forward in your experience, that number, point number 28 of the 30 kind of pops out at you and it's like, oh, okay. That makes sense here. So then you incorporate that and allow whatever the experience is bringing to you, the clarity that's needed so that you don't get trapped within the belief system.
You mean, for example,
if you were
feeling really tired and then I remember, okay, I am self-contained energy production.
Right.
I can... And then, you know, it's almost like your own source of energy supply, right? So
because in this 7th principle, it's where we accept the responsibility of being the co-creator of our reality.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Now, I do have to give a little comment, though. If you do feel like doing the self-regeneration ceremony with the angel gods, do not do it before bedtime. Because you will not sleep for hours.
No.
Or maybe you will, but I couldn't.
No, it's like it revs you up.
Completely, right? You feel like new and energized. And
It's like you don't do the yogas before you go to bed either.
Right. Meditations are good. Bob Hospital is good before bed, but I would not do that ceremony before bed.
Do you know where they can find that ceremony, Denise?
It was part of the Magic of the Gods course. I believe it's the Magic of the Gods 3. Either two or three.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. And the ceremony for abundance, which is incredible, too. I do those two. They're, amazing, as everything is. Yeah. So, anything else you want to add on those, number 7, Linda?
Sometimes the information can seem to be overwhelming, but when you start to incorporate working with the materials that Almeen has blessed us with, it's allowing yourself to take it moment by moment and not become overwhelmed with it. And that's what basically Principle 7's talking about, is staying in the moment.
Yeah.
And if you live in that moment, you're not carrying the baggage of the past with you, and you're not creating baggage and fears for the future. You're in the moment of the energy that is existing as all that is.
Yeah, well said. And that is the moment of timelessness.
It is.
Yeah. I was also feeling this number 7, the principle was talking about the bridge of no time. I was feeling a connection there too.
Yes. Because that's where we're trying tools that we're using them to get us to that place of a time where we're in the center of that tube torus, where there is no push pull or anything like that. We're in that stillness. And if we recognize that our sole purpose for being here is to experience joy, then it helps to create, as that co-creator, that existence. And let go of the belief systems of the struggle and strife, and that everything has to be hard or hurt or.
Yeah, and not to hold on to it, right?
Like, no.
It's like the Divinity Quest card that I read at the start about, hardship is perpetuated by the false value that we've placed on our achievements.
Or thinking you can fail at something.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When we apply, I just say to people, even if you just take praise, love, and gratitude, those three principles and apply them to your life, everything is so much more effortless, even if it is something that's hard or, it's a difficulty that you're a challenge you're experiencing. A lot of times our attitude is what keeps us, held in a lower vibration.
It almost holds us in a stagnation.
It does. And if we're just patient with ourselves and we just know this too shall pass. We're on this eternal journey. And how do you want to emphasize that? What do you want your focus to be? Do you want to be free and flying with the birds and, experiencing the newness of life? Or, it's what you choose to focus on will emphasize your experiences, And it's not that we're resisting anything. We're not.
No. It's funny, how the influences we have in our lives and stuff. Like my mom, she always had a poem on her fridge, and it was called Attitude. Would you like me to share it with you?
Yes, please.
It's called Attitude. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It is more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearances, giftedness, or stuff. It will make or break a company, a church, a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitudes. And that was written by Charles Swinoff.
Mm.
But my mom had that on her fridge probably for 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there's a lot of truth in that, I feel. You know, Almeen says mastery is how we respond to life, not how we react. And, you know, so, yeah, what you want your attitude to be.
That's right. And so it was very, because my mother's attitude was one that she always, one of her sayings was, you know, you say it doesn't hurt and you get up and move on, you know. And that's how she lived her life. I mean, she ended up with diabetes and she lost her sight. So she was totally blind almost by the time she passed. But she had the pain that she was in, I recognize now, was so, I don't even know how she managed to exist the way she did. But there was purpose that she still had to finish. And I was very blessed with being able to be with her when she passed. And it was an experience that she really gifted me with, because that was my biggest fear in life, was losing my parents from the time I was a child. I remember telling them that I would never get married because I could never live without them.
Oh,
and so
God.
it was a fear that was really big for me. So I was gifted with the ability to be with her for a week before she passed. And I mean, she, right to the very end, she was my teacher. When she passed, the whole day, it was a very beautiful day, but I had this deep desire that I wanted her to hug me. I wanted her to hold me. And, I was afraid that when she did pass that I would lose it and you know, crawl in the bed with her or whatever.
Aww.
And so I was with her, and the nurses were moving her up in the bed and working with her, and she passed. And so I phoned my sister and my father and told them that she had passed. And then all of a sudden she started this, what they call apneic breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the body starts to expel the oxygen that's in it.
Yeah.
So her heart wasn't beating, but she was breathing.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching it, and the nurse goes, oh, that's okay. She says that. And so she explained to me what it was. But it doesn't normally last very long. And my mom kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. And so then the nurse checked her, and there was a faint heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
And it's like all of a sudden there's this part of me. It's like, mama, te voy a un pedazo bien, pero bien duro si no te metes, right? And that was, as a kid, Spanish is what I always went to because I grew up in Venezuela, right?
Yeah.
But it was like I said to her, mom, if you don't go now, I'm going to hit you. I'm going to hit you really hard. So it was like, but in that was the blessing. In that was that she gifted me the ability to let go of the fear of losing her, because
yeah,
you can't lose something, right?
Yeah.
But it gifted me that ability, so it took all that fear away. So, I mean, it was pretty funny. When I told my daughter what I'd done, her friend was with her. She says, why Spanish? And my daughter goes, anybody that knows my mother, when Spanish comes out, you know you got to listen.
Oh, so, that's wonderful.
But it was like, no, I told her in Spanish. It's like, you got to go, because I can't call and tell them you've died again.
Wow. But I mean, that's a beautiful, beautiful experience. And
it really was.
You know,
it really was.
It's very powerful that you were able to recognize, you know, not to have any cords or ties, because a lot of times we do, right? Especially if we're grieving, it's, you know, we hold ties and cords to our loved ones.
Well, I was very blessed in the way my mom the way my mom chose to exit. I mean, she knew that the nursing staff thought she was crazy, but they called me in and said that she, you know, so I sat with her, and she wanted me to contact everybody, so everybody got to talk to her that night. My son lives in Calgary and stuff, and my sister, so they didn't physically see her, but they talked to her.
Yeah.
And she was quite perturbed the next morning when she was still here.
Oh,
that was Friday night, and then she finally left 4:30 on Sunday. But yeah, no, she was a little bit perturbed because she was still there. But my daughter and I were sitting at the bedside with her, and she'd gotten quiet, but she was quite fidgety. And all of a sudden she says, "Dance? You want me to go to a dance? Don't you know I'm dying tonight?" So,
it was a wonderful experience. You know, that's wow. Wonderful.
So her attitude was there right till the very end.
Yeah. Amazing. How long has she gone?
It was a year ago on the 4th of May.
Oh, so not too long.
No, it's hard to believe that it has been a year already.
Yeah. Well, blessings to your mother and her beautiful attitude and
thank you.
Sharing her gifts and bringing all the gifts to you.
She really was a wonderful gift.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we are just at the end of our show for this week. Thank you to everybody for listening in. Do you have something you'd like to read to sign us out, Linda?
Sure.
Okay.
As you soar upon the wings of change, allow yourself to fully embrace the gift you bring to the world by just being who you are at this very moment in time. Allow the feelings of pure joy and love that you feel for yourself to become all that you are or ever need be. Accept the pure love and acceptance of self and marvel in the wondrous place that you hold within every fiber of your being. Judge not how others react or treat you, for they are only your mirror to show you how you are treating yourself. If there is unease or non-acceptance, then somewhere within your being you are holding on to an unforgiveness of self, thereby judging yourself, and that is what they are reflecting back to you. If you allow yourself to view all of your interactions in this manner, you will be on the fast track to creating your own heaven on earth. Instead of looking at and reacting to how someone is with you, ask yourself what is trying to show you about your energy. You attract unto yourself whatever your vibration is. Allow your vibration to be one of pure love and joy for yourself, and all others will feel the same, for that is the vibration you bring forward to the world. Now, I think I wrote that back in 2006, so some of it applies and some of it doesn't, but...
Well, I was thinking that tied perfectly into
it did, didn't
principle
it?
Number one. that was awesome.
There are definitely no coincidences because I just opened the book to that page. So.
We love synchronicities. We just have some fun. So thank you. Thank you, Linda, for that beautiful writing and for sharing this beautiful hour with me. And thank you to everyone listening. We wish you praise, love, gratitude, and trust. Have a magical week.
Bye. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.